Hi, this is Steve Poore, and you're listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. Today's guest is helping people understand technology concepts and jargon so that they can succeed in the digital age. Sophia Matviva is a founder and CEO of Tech for Non-Techies. Tech for Non-Techies is an education and executive coaching company that was inspired by her previous experience starting a tech company and struggling to communicate with developers. Through this education platform, business leaders, including legal professionals, can learn more about technology, entrepreneurship, and career success without having to learn how to code. In addition to her work at Tech for Non-Techies, Sophia is a startup mentor at the Chicago Booth Polsky Center of Entrepreneurship and has advised leading accelerators, including Chicago Booth's New Venture Challenge and the Techstars Blackstone Launchpad. She also sits on the advisory board to Riveter, which uses AI to predict consumer trends for the world's biggest brands. Sophia has contributed to the Harvard Business Review, Financial Times, The Guardian, and Forbes, writing on entrepreneurship and technology. And she hosts the Tech for Non-Techies podcast. She's also guest lectured at the University of Chicago, the London Business School, and Oxford University. We had a wide-ranging conversation in which Sophia talked about the origins and objectives of Tech for Non-Techies, perfectionism versus flexibility in the legal world, the readership of her tech blog, and allowing time for curiosity. Thanks to Sophia for such an interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy listening. Sophia, how are you? Thanks for joining.
Hello, Steve. I'm so excited to be on your show. I have been listening to it and I've learned so much from you and your guests that it's just really thrilling to be here.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. To the extent you learn anything from the podcast, it's from the guests, not from me. But thank you for saying that.
Well, humility is always a very attractive and frankly unusual quality in a leader, I'm finding, especially, you know, somebody who has been such a head honcho like yourself.
Well, thank you. So you're the founder and CEO of Tech for Non-Techies.
Yes, I am.
Tell us a little bit about what Tech for Non-Techies is and share the origin story for it, if you would.
Well, my aim is to help people who are basically not computer science PhDs from Stanford succeed in the digital age. And, you know, I think the reason why I got into this is my background was first in the media, then in private equity in London. Then I got my MBA at Chicago Booth. And, you know, I was feeling like I was quite impressed with myself, you know, putting it mildly.
Well, you should have been.
Yeah, you know, I thought I was pretty clever and I was like, things are going pretty well. And then I decided to start a tech company in Chicago Booth. And because of my background and connections, I was able to raise some money and got a team together. And then I hired developers. And that's when I realized that I had no idea what they were talking about. And I didn't know literally the terms that they were using. I didn't know what a tech stack was. I didn't know what an API was. I didn't know like what dependencies were, product metrics, all of that jargon. I had no idea. And the University of Chicago has given me a lot. But also, to be fair, I did pay them $180,000.
You know, fair.
Yeah, I think it's a fair exchange. But what they didn't cover were concepts of software innovation. So we learned about big tech companies in terms of how they change the economy, because obviously we had to talk about economics a lot. But in terms of how software products are made and how business people work with them, we just didn't know. So when I was in this position as a business leader working with tech people, I thought, well, I have to learn all of this stuff. I have to learn this jargon. I have to learn how to lead them. I have to learn how to collaborate. But I don't want to become a coder. I don't want to become a data scientist. I don't want to get a computer science degree. So what am I supposed to do? And that's when I really saw that there was this gap. And I think this is really the problem that I'm trying to solve. We are living in such a siloed world, which really begins with our education and then continues in our workplace. You know, you choose your track, you go and you get your MBA and you're a business person and then you stick to that. Or you go to law school. Actually, I think law schools and, you know, MBAs, there's kind of more in common. We at least have some common language. But then you have the tech people and they're basically just from another planet, right? That's how people often feel. And my aim with Tech for Non-Techies is to really help people who are more like me, more like you, to really understand how do we succeed in the digital age, because we all have to collaborate with tech people. all of us, you know, if you want to work with tech clients, you have to understand what they're talking about, especially if you're dealing with startups or venture capitalists. You're often not dealing with an in-house counsel. You're going to be dealing with the actual operator who works and thinks in a really different way. But also, Steve, as you and I talked about, law firms are going through this huge digital transformation right now. So, and I think especially for lawyers, you know, all of my lawyer friends, you know, they say to me, hang on, I went into law because I didn't want to do the maths test that you needed to do, right, to do to go into investment banking. And now you're making me do this. This wasn't what I signed up for. And like, I don't want to put people off because I think it's kind of in a lot of the techies' interests to make people think, oh, you know, it's really hard. You have to master statistics. You have to understand coding in order to have some sort of, in order to even be able to have a conversation with, you know, the technologist. But I've done it and I just find that it's not true. So with Tech for Non-Techies, I'm aiming to educate people. And education, you know, it's concepts, but it's also confidence. So it's knowledge and confidence.
So as you're talking, as we're, you know, this podcast obviously focuses on the legal industry. Not that we're necessarily unique, although we like to think we're special unicorns. But what are the biggest challenges you think are posed in the digitization of work for people who are in the legal profession?
Well, I would actually say that it's a mindset thing, because lawyers are trained to be perfectionists. This is literally what you are supposed to do. And digital innovators are trained to essentially use the scientific method, which is we have a theory that something might work. We have a hypothesis. We don't know for sure. We can't know for sure until we try it. So we're going to try something and then we're going to see whether it works or not. And if it works, we'll keep it. And if it doesn't, we'll scrap it. That is literally the opposite of perfectionism. The example I like to give to lawyers is, I remember when I ran my first tech company and we raised money and we had a shareholders agreement. And obviously we needed lawyers to help us actually, you know, make that shareholders agreement a legal, legally binding document. And it was about 40 pages long. And obviously everybody had an opinion.
And they only had one opinion apiece. That you were dealing with some good lawyers.
Oh, no, various shareholders had opinions. My team, you know, the equity holders and my team also had opinions. They were just, everybody wanted me to know that their opinion was the right one and all of the other people were wrong. So I had a really fun time with the shareholders agreement. I actually remember going and having a therapy session about it. So anyway, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, so once we got the shareholders agreement done and, you know, I survived with that experience, then obviously, you know, the lawyers made it perfect. Then even getting the signatures was a whole other ordeal, making sure that everybody signed by the right date and all of that. And so when this thing was created, I really didn't want to go through that experience ever again. And so essentially a legal contract, the output of a lawyer's work has to be perfect, because even though in theory you can change it, you really don't want to. I'm sure you have renegotiated contracts, but it is not a thing that anybody ever really is dying to do.
Certainly not from a business perspective, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the lawyers are obviously getting paid for it, but the business perspective, I remember when we actually did end up raising more money and so had to make changes to the shareholders agreement. I remember thinking, literally, if there wasn't this sum of money at the end of it, I would not be putting myself through this hell, right? And so the output of a lawyer's work is not going to be changed very frequently. And also it has to be watertight. You know, like imagine if you're buying a house and your lawyer says, well, you know, we think this deed works. We think it's your house, but we don't know. Why don't you move in and then just see what happens? That's your thing. Well, this is not a lawyer. This is a crazy person. But literally the equivalent of that is how tech innovators think. They think, well, we don't know. There's only one way to find out. Let's just move forward and see what happens. And I'm not saying that one system is better than the other, because they're actually not. They're just different systems. And those different systems must be used appropriately. So when you are creating something that can't be changed easily and something that essentially, you know, has to be perfect, then that thing requires a lot of planning. It requires a lot of analysis. It requires a lot of attention to detail. You really can't get it wrong. But then when you are creating something that essentially you can change quite easily, like you release a feature, it doesn't work, nobody likes it or nobody wants to pay for it, you roll it back the following week. There, in that environment, it's more important to essentially just move forward, get things wrong and learn from them. And I think in this digital age, we have this clash of cultures. We have the perfectionist culture and we have the iterative culture. And what I often see people do when they think, okay, we are now going to really get into this whole digital innovation thing, they try to forget their training and they then attempt to do design thinking and agile innovation in places where it actually just doesn't work. And so what I say to lawyers and what I say to law firms is that just differentiate between the product that you're making. Because if you're making a product that can be easily changed, then this design thinking, agile innovation mindset is what you need. And you need to kind of force yourself to take risks. And you need to force yourself to understand that, you know, 9 out of 10 things are not going to work, but the one that does is going to be worth it. That's literally how venture capitalists think. But do not apply that mindset, you know, to your client contract work, because your client's not going to be particularly happy. So it's really understanding, where do I do iteration? Where do I do perfection? Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. I'm curious, on the mindset front, you've had the business since 2020, and you've experienced two sort of significant changes in the way people interact with technology, both the pandemic, where people have to interact with technology differently and remotely and everything else. And then, of course, generative AI, where apparently the world has changed dramatically, if you believe the hype. How have those events changed the way people bring their mindsets? Are they more willing to be flexible now?
I would actually say it's not so much the technology itself, but the money surrounding it, right? Because at the end of the day, law firms are commercial enterprises. And so businesses, you know, business people, traditional business people, they also want to get paid. So for example, the audience for my podcast is basically people who went to law school and people who went to business school, who are trying to figure out what the computer scientists are talking about. And those people generally, they love the work that they're doing, but they want to get paid for the work that they're doing. And so if you remember, during the pandemic, tech valuations were sky high. Tech companies were hiring everybody. And it seemed that like everybody was doing really badly. The world was falling apart, but Mark Zuckerberg was raking it in.
I recall that, yes.
Did that make you love him more or less?
No, it didn't.
I mean, I think everybody had that feeling, but they also thought, oh my God, okay, I need to, like, that's where the opportunity is. That's where the money is. I need to, you know, increase my skill set. I need to kind of do something about this. And during the pandemic, you know, a lot of people invested in their education because basically they couldn't go out, you know, and go to parties. So they took online courses. And I think when you actually see just how much financial opportunity there is in learning about this stuff, either because you can work with tech clients, which is, you know, a gift that is going to keep on giving because the tech industry is still quite young, or, you know, just companies are going to go through digital transformation for decades to come, because digital transformation, not only does it require technology, it requires changing mindsets, it requires changing organizations from the inside. And so these are huge priorities. These are huge business priorities that essentially, if you get them right, will make you a lot of money. And I think that's what's driving people to, and like, I think the pandemic pushed people to think, oh, okay, this is where the opportunity is. And, you know, finally, I recently saw a statistic that only 10% of Fortune 500 companies are technically classified as tech companies.
Which, really?
Yeah, I found that really surprising because it seems like they're everywhere and taking over. But actually, 10% is a small number, which basically means that we are still at the beginning. And so even though it feels like this whole tech thing and digital transformation has been around for ages, actually, we're still at the beginning of this. And isn't it better to be at the beginning of the gold rush than at the end?
It absolutely is. You make the observation on your website, I think, about every company is a tech company in some sense.
Yes. Well, I mean, your coffee shop probably has an app, right?
Right.
And, you know, this is something that I saw an old statistic from Starbucks. I'm not sure how up to date it is now, but I think probably pretty similar. I saw that 54% of their revenue in their stores came by their app. And you can see that in places like Starbucks or Joe and the Juice, where they're really driving customers not to, you know, talk to their baristas, but to order via the app. And that's where they're basically getting most of their revenue from. And, you know, it makes sense for all sorts of reasons. And then I think, okay, well, Starbucks or Joe and the Juice, are they tech companies? No, they're not. You know, they're still like, it's basically real estate and stuff we put into our mouths. But now their revenues are heavily dependent on technology, which means that what their decision makers are thinking about, like, is no longer, you know, where do we get the best coffee? Where do we get the best avocados? Where do we get the best real estate? It's also about technology risk. It's also about product risk. It's also about design thinking. And so I don't think you can be in the modern C-suite today and just not understand these terms, which is completely different, I think, to probably even, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, where if you knew about it, then you're kind of like a really forward-thinking hippie, but you didn't really need to know about it. And this is why, you know, I think for lawyers, especially in the US, because the market's slightly different in the UK, but in the US, lawyers are strategic advisors. You know, lawyers are not document drafters. Lawyers are really people who understand the business environment and have legal expertise who can basically help a business to mitigate upcoming legal risks. Like that's a strategic advisor.
That's certainly the best definition.
And, you know, if you're going to be a great strategic advisor, you need to understand what your client is thinking about. And this is what I think is remarkable, that if you're working with a company like Starbucks, not only do you need to understand that the CEO is going to be thinking about commodity prices and real estate and employment law, they're now also going to be thinking about product strategy and, you know, licensing software, which is a completely new thing.
So you focus on the non-techie side of it to help them understand what the techie said. How about the techie side?
Well, you know what, Steve, it's so interesting. But now so many engineers and like actually serious engineers who have, you know, sold tech companies, listen to my podcast and read my newsletter, which honestly freaks me out because obviously, you know, I remember that I got a really nice note from somebody who has a PhD in engineering from Cambridge. And they're like, yes, I've been reading your newsletter. So informative. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what did they teach you? But what I realized is that because I have a holistic overview, you know, like when you don't know something in depth, you end up getting a holistic overview. Whereas when you know something in lots and lots of depth, you actually don't necessarily know what the other parts are doing. Like, you know, if you know how to make a part of a particular motor, like in a car, you don't necessarily know how your colleagues who make a car door work. And so I'm finding that a lot of engineers are actually really interested in, okay, well, I know how to do Ruby on Rails development, or I know how to analyze data with Python, but I have no idea what designers do. And my product manager is always annoying me, but I don't know how to get through to them. And so what I'm seeing now is that our education system has not caught up with the workplace. And, you know, we can't really blame the education system because digital technology has just, you know, changed things so quickly. And education systems are usually ran by governments who are, you know, not the most fast moving people. But because of that, essentially lots and lots of people don't understand how to speak to their colleagues. They don't understand why their tech colleagues are doing one thing and why their business colleagues are doing another thing. Does that resonate? Does that make sense? Because, I mean, you are leading, you're working on innovation, which is forward thinking, but you're also in a huge law firm. So you must have a huge diversity of views around you. And so how are you managing to essentially keep your eye on moving forward whilst also working in a profession that, you know, does it go back to King Solomon or earlier?
Earlier. Certainly feels like it anyway. You know, it's an interesting dynamic because law firms are, for all intents and purposes, are made up of partners and made up of a variety of business owners. And certainly large law firms have hundreds. The biggest law firms will have thousands of partners that are technically owners of the business and have their own little quadrant of the business and are concerned about their own clients and their own revenue and their own profitability. And they come at it from very different circumstances. And it poses a really challenging change management opportunity for law firms. You know, you've really got to make the business case. You've got to try to answer for people, what's in it for me? Why should I change? But the other piece you have to, you know, you hit on it in terms of mindset, perfection versus flexibility. You have to be a little more flexible because you're not going to get everybody on the same page. You get 300 lawyers in a room and you're going to get 600 different opinions. You've got to accept that. You've got to deal with it. And you've got to take, there was a consultant, a pretty famous consultant into the legal industry called David Meister. I don't know if David is still around or not, but David wrote the book, I think it's called The Trusted Advisor.
Oh, I'm actually listening to that on Audible right now.
Yeah, it's an really old book, good. But it's a great book.
I mean, it's still really useful.
Oh, it absolutely is. David got it right. And I remember we had David come in and do consulting. And this goes back probably 15 or 20 years. And I asked him basically the question you ask me, which is, how do you train partners? He said, let me ask you a question. How do you train pigeons? I said, okay, David, I don't understand the question. He goes, okay, you've got a box. You've got a pigeon in the bottom left-hand corner, and you want to train the pigeon to get to the upper right-hand corner. You've got grain. Where do you put the grain to train the pigeon to get to the upper right-hand corner? Do you put it in the upper right-hand corner? And the answer, of course, is no, because that's too far for the pigeon to see. You put it out a little bit, pigeon cuts it and comes back. You put it out a little bit more, pigeon gets it. And ultimately, over time, pigeon is trained to get to the corner. Now, in the analogy, David overlooks the fact that someone's got to know where the corner is. But in not to equate human beings to pigeons, but the analogy is that you've got to be patient and make incremental gains and show success and mitigate the risk factor by being willing to recognize mistakes and correct them and build on the successes that you've got. So it's an interesting change management process.
You know, this reminds me of a conversation I had with a partner in a very large law firm who was we're having a chat about the kind of trainings that they've had that worked and that didn't work. And he said to me, we had this awful training where essentially somebody who was an ex-Googler came and talked to us about mindsets and agile innovation. And essentially they said, you know, like, we don't want to become a tech company. We don't want to become a Google. And essentially what they were saying was that, you know, this person came in and said, like, this is kind of the big tech way. That's the right way. Everything's got to be agile. You've got to move fast and break things and all of this. And that this partner was saying that there was really no kind of understanding and also frankly respect for where they were coming from. And I think this is part of the misunderstanding because, you know, we always overcorrect, unfortunately, right? It's kind of like what everybody does in January. We completely overindulge in December. And then it's like, okay, I am going to survive on kale juice and prayers for the rest of my life. Right? And then that lasts like 2 weeks. Anyway, so we overcorrect. And I find that when companies are going through digital transformation, then a lot of the time they kind of look at tech companies or they look at startups and they think, oh, you know, we want a bit of that, you know, startup innovation magic. Let's implement that here. And unless I think you can kind of get those ideas, you can kind of be like an artist. You know, artists get inspiration from each other, but they don't copy each other. Because that would be plagiarism. Then they wouldn't be real artists, right? And I think that with really kind of traditional organizations, but also organizations that are lawyers are literally trained to look at precedent. So lawyers are trained to look backwards and then make decisions based on what has happened before and what has happened when the world was a really, really different place. So I think when you're going through digital innovation, you're teaching innovation concepts, you also have to be really respectful of kind of who you are dealing with. And I find that a lot of the tech people, I mean, to be honest, they've become so rich and powerful that no wonder that they're going around and telling everybody what to do.
Right. The other piece of it is, and Susskind makes this point repeatedly, which is that the model for particularly big law has been a very successful model. It's changing. Technology is changing it dramatically. But you have a lot of people that have been very successful in this model, and they're not interested in breaking the mold. Now, maybe the mold will be broken by external forces. I don't know that. But they're not interested in breaking it because it's been successful. And I think if you don't have respect for that position and understanding where they come from, you're never going to effectively drive even any modifications or change.
You know, on a kind of a really, I can tell you a family story because my uncle, he actually runs, you know, it's a family intellectual property firm. So he's an engineer and a lawyer. So he's got two degrees, which are basically all about being a perfectionist. So, you know, whenever we plan a trip, like, we have a very different approach. He packs for every possible like eventuality, but you know, at least he can fix things, which I definitely can't. But I remember I said to him, I said, look, I've looked at the website and when was the last time, like, have you seen what's on there? And I said, it's terrible. Like, how can you even kind of have your name on such a thing? And he told me that he hadn't opened his own business's website for quite a while. But also, why bother? Because, you know, clients keep on coming. The clients are happy. He's doing interesting work. Yeah, so there's this thing. And he's like, oh, it's not great. But, you know, one day I'll get around to it. But it's really not a priority. And as much as I tried to shame him into doing something about it, like it completely didn't work. Precisely because of what you said, Steve, is that things are great. Why would I want to do more work? I don't spend enough time with my family as it is. I can't be bothered. And I don't think, I mean, I gave up. I don't think there's anything you can do with that. And the reason also totally makes sense. So I do think it's kind of winning hearts and minds. And there will be some people who are just curious. What I find, kind of how I started working with lawyers and with law firms, is because senior associates at law firms started listening to my podcast, subscribed to my newsletter, and then wrote to me saying, this is interesting. I want to work out how to find a budget to bring your firm's training into what we're doing. And that's the kind of person who is, you know, incredibly proactive. That's the kind of person who is going to have a really, really bright future. Because they go and they find a podcast. Instead of watching Netflix, they're listening to, you know, podcasts to better themselves. Then they actually reach out to that organization and then they go through the corporate hierarchy to make things happen. But most people are not going to do that. That's why most people are not going to end up becoming, you know, managing partners or CEOs, right? And that's human nature, I think.
No, I think that's right. Do you see a generational difference in those mindsets and those attitudes? I assume so.
I mean, a bit, but not really. I don't think it's that. I think younger people assume that they can learn, whereas people who are a bit older, the default assumption is I can't learn, it's too difficult. Whereas kind of the younger people, it's easier to, like when I say to them, look, this is not a coding course, don't worry. We can actually cover basic concepts and give you knowledge and confidence to talk to a technologist and to understand what's going on. You know, even in a three-hour workshop, like that will make a big difference. People believe that that's possible. Whereas people who are older generally think that even this workshop, I'm going to make them do something awful, like which includes post-its, and they just don't want to do it. But what I find in terms of this proactive, non-proactive thing, I don't think it's generations. I think it's just people. There is a reason why you got to the position that you did at your law firm, right? Like there's a reason why your career went this way. And I'm assuming not everybody that you went to law school with had the kind of career that you have now. And it's because you put your hand up for things. You look for opportunities. You know, you're always being proactive, which means that, you know, some things work, some things don't. When they don't, you feel sorry for yourself, but you get up again. And I think there's a small minority of people who are like that. And those are the people who are essentially moving our world forward, whether it's by managing law firms or going into politics or becoming investors or whatever it is.
You know, you made an interesting point about curiosity. I think that's an undervalued characteristic for people. I find that to be one of the more important characteristics of people who are receptive to change, receptive to innovation, receptive to digital transformation. How do you facilitate that characteristic in people?
You know, it's so interesting you say that, because I remember being at the beginning of my career and hearing the people right at the top saying, we want you to be curious. But my immediate boss, the middle manager, did not want me to be curious.
I think that's a typical dynamic.
Yeah, and I think it is typical because the middle manager has a deadline to make. They're worried about it, you know. And when you are, like I was an analyst in a private equity firm, you have no time for curiosity. Nobody cares about your curiosity, right? And it's going to be the same with an associate who's straight out of law school. They physically don't have the time. And also the people that they're reporting to, they just want that work done. And I remember when I was really junior, kind of being really frustrated because I saw myself as a curious person and I wanted to be curious. And the organization seemed to be giving me mixed messages. They were saying, yes, go and be curious, but just not today and not tomorrow, at some point. And so then the question is, how can you incentivize middle management to allow time for curiosity? Does that mean that you are going to essentially have some sort of equivalent of Google's 20% time? Do you know what that is?
I do, although there's been some argument that it's actually the 120%.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard in effect, that's probably usually the case. And, you know, also we don't really want to copy, as I said, we don't want to copy everything that Google is doing. But I wonder, is there room? Like, how can we essentially schedule it into a junior person's life given billable hours? So essentially, that means that either there's going to be a financial hit, which is going to be a short-term financial hit in order for there to be long-term financial gain, or is it just going to be, okay, using some large language models, so basically outsourcing some of the work to technology, which then essentially allows more room for creativity. But I think the more senior people, they have time to read and to think, and that's wonderful. But junior people, they often have ideas and they often have insights and experiences that essentially could really help the organization grow, but they just don't have a voice because, you know, nobody allows them to speak. And often they're too scared because if they say something wrong, then everybody's going to think, oh, well, or they're afraid that they'll be judged.
Fair enough. Sophia, we've run out of time. It's been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve. It has been an absolute honor and a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Pioneers and Pathfinders. Be sure to visit thepioneerpodcast.com for show notes and more episodes. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform.